Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, taking you behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. We've got a full house for this episode of Stagecraft. I'm talking to Oscar and Tony-winning composers Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, and Tony-winning playwright Stephen Levinson, the creators of the hit musical Dear Evan Hansen, and all of them joined by Val Emick, the actor, musician, and novelist who's adapted the musical into a young adult novel that's on shelves now. All four of them are sharing mics and crammed into a conference room with some wonky sound quality, so we apologize for that. But we're all here to talk about taking their story on a rare journey from the stage to the page, and why they made the changes they made along the way. Hi, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So I was thinking that this was basically unprecedented to have a novelization of a Broadway show, but apparently I've been told otherwise. Let me know, what's the history of novelizations of Broadway shows?
So as far as we've been told, and we've asked, I think, around to say, can someone fact check this or something? And everyone's like, well, this is what we can figure out.
That's basically how Broadway facts work.
That's fact checking. What we've been told is that Annie, the musical, was novelized by Martin Charnin, actually,
right,
after it was on Broadway. I guess the difference being that this is an original story,
sure,
you know, an original musical, and so therefore we could probably say this is the first novelization of an original Broadway musical,
right,
which still sounds sparkly.
Still sounds pretty cool.
Cool to us in our minds.
Right, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And so because it's a thing that, you know, you have to ask the old timer on the corner about when the last time it happened. Like, how did the idea come to you? It's not a thing that occurs to most Broadway shows. You know, Stephen?
Well, you know, it started to come out of our conversations when the show moved to Broadway, actually. And we started to feel like there was this real community of people that was responding to the show and was interested in knowing more about the show and digging into these characters, and especially online, we started to find a lot of people who hadn't seen the show, but who had seen maybe clips of it on YouTube or pictures or and listened to the recording. And basically, we found all of this fan art started to come out, and then fan fiction, and people were just really connecting with these characters in a way that really surprised us. And it also felt like, I think all theater makers are conscious of this today, which is the high price of theater tickets, right, and the relative inaccessibility of Broadway especially. And it started to feel like we have a story that we get to tell to about 1,000 people a night in this one city in the world for an exorbitant price. And it felt like, is there a way to get this story out to more people who might not otherwise have a chance to experience it? And it felt like there was a real hunger for that. And, you know, at the same time as we were thinking about that, we had always, you know, as this was an original musical and we kind of developed it from the ground up, there's so much that got left on the cutting room floor and so many ideas and so many tangents that just kind of got lopped off as we went along. And then also some questions that emerged as we wrote it that we just couldn't answer in the span of a 2.5 hour musical. So both of those things kind of converged, and we felt like a novel might be a way to kind of dig deeper into some of these moments and into these characters and also reach a broader audience.
So more so than something like, you know, a movie adaptation or a televised adaptation or something, something that would also increase the accessibility but wouldn't necessarily give you more time or space to explore those stuff.
Right. Well, that is the big difference with a novel, is that it is such an expansive experience, and it's such a deep experience, and it felt like a movie, for instance, is a kind of another compressed story form that forces, you know, you to figure out how to get it all within a certain length of time. And it felt like a novel was a way to kind of ease into these characters a little bit more. And it felt like something... it felt somehow natural to this story.
Yeah. YA also seems like a natural fit in terms of who the main characters are and who a lot of its fan base is. Like, were you always thinking, oh, it's going to be a sort of, you know, older skewing YA book?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the show definitely is for all ages, and we wanted the book to be for all ages as well, in the sense that when people come in to experience the show, parents and kids, we found that it's really a conversation starter between them, or a lot of older audience members will either remember their own high school days or think about what it means to be a parent today. And when we were sort of assessing where we wanted to land with the book, we could have just written a totally adult version of it, which I guess is more in line with what the show is, or we could have written something that skewed more YA. I think that the reason that we wanted it to be an adult, I guess, quote-unquote YA version, is so that it could feel like it really was accessible to older people as well, because I think the main group that actually reads YA novels is 30- or 40-year-old women.
That's correct. It's actually it's for adults now.
Right.
That has been fact-checked.
Right.
Yeah. That's true. That's actually true.
but what was the most important to us is that the show really is about intimate and delicate subject matter, like depression and loneliness, and how we kind of lie to ourselves and try to break through really, really sort of difficult conversations with the people that we love. And we wanted that to be accessible to a younger audience, and we wanted it to be in school systems. We wanted it to facilitate conversations. We wanted it to spark conversations between parents and kids. And we didn't want to write something that was so inaccessible that it couldn't also be a resource for younger people that were going through these kinds of difficult times in their lives to be able to talk about and engage with.
Yeah, that was the thing that I think we didn't realize, was that that was a big sort of point that the publishers made, was, you know, YA novels are read by audiences of all ages, but really it was that with the YA sort of approach to it, it would guarantee that we'd have a really good chance of getting the book into libraries, into schools. And, you know, we thought about classes reading the book as part of an assignment. We thought about kids, you know, encountering that book in a way they might not have otherwise, and that felt important to us.
And you know, when I talked about sort of the hunger for this story and the appetite for this story, so much of that, so much of that desire to interact with these characters and to kind of expand the story is a younger person's impulse. You know, like, I think from our generation, we're not really used to that. We sort of take our stories and we're happy with them. And it feels like a younger generation does want to engage with them more. And so it felt like that audience also really needed this story in a way. And so it felt like whatever we were going to do, we wanted to make sure that they could find it. While at the same time making something that would, if an adult picks it up and reads it, I don't think, other than the words YA on it, I don't think that they would know that it was specifically a YA novel. In fact, Val, in writing the novel, I think didn't even quite realize that that's what it was supposed to be.
No, I didn't. And also, I think if you direct something to teens, adults could find it. But if you direct it to adults, teens might not find it. So I think it's a good thing to do the former. No, I didn't know. In fact,
was that true of, you wrote on another book that came out last year called The Reminders, that was that true of that book as well, in terms of that, what audience you were directing it to?
I don't pay attention to the categories, not because I don't think they're important or whatever. I just, that's not what I do when I start to write a story. And I was told, in fact, when one of my characters in my first book is a 10-year-old girl and the other one's a close to 40-year-old man. And one agent read it and said, like, I don't know if I can gear this to adults. And every other person was like, what? Of course it's an adult book. So there can even be confusion there. our editor was like, I was like, can I curse? And she's like, yeah, just make, I was like, so what, how is it different? And she's like, it's not really, just, it's basically who tells the story. And Evan is the person telling a story, so.
Right.
Yeah.
And The Reminders, which is the name of your novel, the last novel, has sort of overlaps a little bit in sort of some thematic ways, right? Like, not only is music involved, but also it's kind of about what we remember of people, right?
Yeah, that was a strange, like...
Is that how you guys connected? Like, how did you guys meet?
I certainly, well,
We're very surface level, and so that had that in his book. We were like, he could do it in our book. Great.
Sure, right.
Someone told us that.
Easy.
Right, yeah. No, we actually...
Right, someone told me yeah. the jacket.
Yes.
Right,
and, yeah. And we heard Reminder. That sounds like our show. Our editor introduced us to... You know, we knew from the beginning that as painful as it was to not write every single word of this, we knew that...
Well, that was actually one of my questions.
Yeah.
Steven, did you think of doing it yourself?
When we first started talking about it, I was like, absolutely not. I just can't. And then as we started talking about it more to more people, I was like, I think I have to. And then I was like, no, I can't. And I also, like, I don't... I love writing, and I love these characters, but the novel is such a different beast, yeah. and it is such a different skill set, and I've just been in awe of Val's ability to do things that I certainly couldn't do.
Stephen could have done it. I'm glad he didn't.
No. But the truth is we read a bunch of authors when we decided that, and Val's book, for the reasons that you mention, thematically, but even more than that, just the voice, just felt like Val has such a compassionate kind of view of his characters and such a like a soft touch. And also the different perspectives felt like something that we knew that we wanted for this book. We were really excited about the possibility.
Did you know what the perspectives were when you started? Because actually that's a surprising choice in the novel, is
yeah.
that who the other perspective people
I pitched
is.
A bunch of, when our first we first met over lunch, I pitched a bunch of perspectives, but I think we all thought they all sounded great, and there might have been like every character I might have thrown out. Yeah, we'll do Zoe, we'll do the mom. Sure. Right. And I even had some books examples, but when it came down to it, like I realized I can only do, you know, a few things, and it was trial and error. And then after I showed them some stuff, I think everyone agreed, like, we need more of that, namely.
Yeah, well, even in the development of the Broadway show, I think when we really began to drill down into what the show was saying, it really is ultimately the story of two boys and how one boy could have gone in one direction and one boy could have gone in the direction of the other boy very, very easily. And so I think highlighting and hearing internally from each of these two boys,
from
Evan and
boys.
Connor,
yep.
You know, it allows you to get inside their heads and go on sort of both of their journeys. And I think we get to learn a lot more about a character that's really enigmatic in the show, but we get to really dive into that character and hear what's going on in his, you know, in his own psychological state to
right.
to get him to certain places.
Right. As I was reading it, I was sort of thought of it as kind of like a 350-page song, right? If one of the functions of a song in a musical is to, like, open a window into the inner life of a character, like, that's basically what you do for Evan, except for the parts that are narrated by Connor, right?
Well, that is the interesting thing, is, like, people see the show and you think of it like that it's in Evan's head or in Evan's point of view, and that's mostly true. It's sort of told through the lens of Evan, of what he's experiencing. There's actually very few moments in the show where Evan, you know, turns down stage and sings to us and tells us, just us, a private right. sort of connection with the audience, what he's feeling. It happens only a couple of times. And most of the time he's in community, in dialogue with other characters, and we hear what he's thinking through that. But it's not one of those shows where time stops and Evan sort of fills us in on what he's thinking at each moment. You can tell because of the script, because of the songs, because of the brilliant performances that we have from the guys who played the role, but this is really is a whole other experience to actually be in his head. It feels like even the moments from the show that are in the book, you feel like you're experiencing them for the first time because it's actually from his point of view, and you're hearing what the sort of constant running dialogue in his head.
Yeah, it's a little bit like taking the subtext and making it actual text, right?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So, Val, tell us about what that writing process was. So when did you see the show, and then how much did you read, like, the stuff that Stephen was mentioning about, you know, the stuff that got left on the cutting room floor? Like, how much does that work in? How much of that is your own, of the new stuff, is your own creation? What was that balance?
I read the play before I saw the show. And I
when
thought,
would this have been?
This was last summer, 2017, July.
So it had won the Tony and everything, and you'd heard.
Oh, that. Yeah. I wish I didn't know all that. and then I, but even on the page, I was like, that's when I was like, I think this could work. And it was actually after seeing the show where I was like, oh, this is going to be harder than I thought. But I went back. I went
well,
back.
Wait, why? What about the show made you think, oh, crap?
Because so much of the emotional immediacy is in these creative touches with social media and then the songs and then the acting. I saw it with Ben Platt, so I was like, oh man, what am I going to do? It's just like as amazing as the book is that Stephen wrote, like I really realized it was much, much more when I saw the show. So, but I always had faith in the story on the page. I was like, this could work. At first, I think I gave them something that was just like, all right, here's the book on the page. And they were like, no, we want more than that. Don't just like write it verbatim. So then I went even much, much farther.
Yeah.
And then it was like, no, bring us back. I lied about it, about all that
Wait,
changing,
how far?
Yeah. I said.
And we should say that there's some conversations that at least they sound to me, I haven't seen it in a while, but they sound like, if not verbatim, then very similar
very
to
similar.
The song.
Definitely.
But it's also, a lot of those are sort of, I don't know, filled out or expanded. And then there are, of course, other scenes that don't even exist at all. There are also characters that don't exist at all that are all...
Yeah, it was a trial and error with the guys and our editor to be like, when to change and when not to change. Right. There were things where...
And so when do you do that? Was there a rule of thumb?
It was, if I didn't hear anything, okay.
I found that sometimes when in early drafts when there were conversations taking place, because they should, because they're part of the story, that were similar to the show, I felt you changing them because we had said, push, reach, go further, do it. And at a certain point we found, you know what, like when we're having a conversation in the book that is like the show, like the characters speak the way that Stephen wrote them from the beginning. And so like those can feel more close to the show's dialogue, but they're all sort of, you sort of come upon them from varying places, and it's not similar to the show's context at all, where it's you happen to find yourself in them, but it's only for a little chunk, and then we depart from that. So there were decisions about characters where we said, oh, you know what, we actually went down that road, and it was there's a big pitfall there, so come back. We tried to make that work. We get that instinct. That was our instinct. We tried to make that work, and it didn't work, or the problem with that is... If Evan says that, then it doesn't make sense when he says it. Like, you know, we tried to keep it all consistent in the world of Evan Hansen. But as you said, there are new characters. There are, and that was exciting for us because it felt like seeing, you know, this beloved person that you know well in like an entirely new context all of a sudden. I was saying the other day, it's like if you go to your kid's graduation and suddenly you're like, oh, that's this, yes, that's having this out of body experience where we're hearing Val. Write new scenes and new relationships and interactions for these characters and saying, that's not what we wrote, but that is the character and that we know.
So, you know, bringing this back to a theater podcast for a second, I find like what Val was able to do was the best version of what we try to do when we do an adaptation of a novel or of a movie. And, you know, you try to keep the parts that you think people want and you try to make sure that it works for the actual form. None of us, the three of us, authors of Evan Hansen, the original musical, really had any clue what it meant to make something into a novel. And, you know, I found, like, the process to be sort of very similar when we're doing any kind of adaptation of, well, what are the needs of a musical and how do we fulfill them? And I think Val really led us through the process of novelization in an adaptation of something and said, what's necessary to this particular art form and then how do you maximize that?
Well, they're almost sort of opposite forms of writing in a way, because... When you're writing a play or a musical or a film, it's all about economy. You know, it's all about what are the least number of words I need to get this across. So it's like in the musical we say, you know, we don't even say it, you know, it's somehow roundabout, but you get that Jared and Evan are family friends, you know, and that's enough. Like we as the audience get exactly what that means. But in a novel, you can actually explore what does that mean? How do they know each other? How do their parents know each other? And that's just a small example of, like, you know, you can just sort of do a hint of something in dialogue, and it's it fills we fill it in as an audience, and you don't do that in a novel.
It's also economy of, you know, like locations in,
yes.
in a theater sure. production.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so I am like, well, this isn't all going to happen in Evan's room, so let's go in a car. Let's go for a walk. Those are the chances where I get to create something. Also, how did Evan become a park ranger? Well, that was never discussed in the right. Or a park ranger apprentice. So, like, I have to figure that kind of stuff out.
And so what the choices that were made with Connor, how much of that, Val, was you, and how much of that was in conversation with these guys? What, how did that, because that's all stuff that's going to be new to the people from the musical.
Yeah.
What, where did that come from, I guess, the question.
The real short answer is, like, it was, that was all of us putting our heads together. The voice is the, like, I can't do anything until I find a voice. So they could tell me, I want this, I want that. And if I can't tell how to say it, then I can't really do the job. So the first job was just like, how does Connor speak? How does he convey his emotions? And once they signed off on that, like, oh, we like that. Then it was just a matter of like, okay, now what do we want to know about Connor? One of the big things they wanted was, let's hear about some of these things that are sort of iconic in the story, in the musical. Him, Connor throwing a printer at Mrs. G in second grade that everyone knows about, this legend. Like, what really happened? We got to do fun stuff like that. And that was directly the guys saying, like, can you show us, like, the real Connor? Let's figure out who the real Connor is.
Well, because Connor is a character that is quite intentionally in the show sort of ventriloquized all the time. He's right. the person that everybody says, this is who he is, this is what he says, this is how he was in the world, and this actually gave us the opportunity to say, well, what of those things are actually true, and how did that get filtered into what people consider the truth?
And it's really interesting in the sort of theater versus literature conversation, we found in a weird, surprising way, I guess not that surprising, but we found that while we had to make sure we did justice to Connor in the musical and sort of still made him a three-dimensional, you know, person, we found in the show that spending a lot of time or too much time with him or even with his mother and her grief and doing that, we ended up really doing a disservice to the overall, I don't know if it's like a cosmetic thing or an energy thing or what it was, but we found that the show was so heavily weighed down and never got its start. When tons of time was spent with the character, but we had baked in, and the actor who was playing the role as well, we all said this needs to be a real person, fully drawn, and so we had spent a lot of time talking about what this character was. He's not a bully. He's not, you know, he's not a mean kid. He's not, you know, there's the joke in the show and the book about a school shooter.
Right.
This is actually a character who is very similar to our protagonist. Who is isolated, who's alone, who feels misunderstood, who is struggling with all kinds of things. And so that was all there. And so that was what we all wanted to do, which was, how can we explore that? And we know that in a novel, it's okay to spend some time with him and to really understand him. And that was probably one of our favorite parts of getting to do this, was to sort of fully draw that character.
One thing that is true of a lot of YA novels is that they come out in series. Is this the first of a series? The Dear Evan Hansen,
so the picture book
extended
is,
no. universe?
Yeah.
I think we're just very excited that we're about to launch a novel tomorrow.
Right.
I think we're all just like, we feel like at the end of a track meet, just breathing heavily
right.
at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that made me a little queasy.
Well, before we go, let's talk a little bit about what else you guys are working on. Val, are you working on another novel? Do you have music coming out?
I am working on another novel, but I feel like I just jinxed it by saying that. It's very early going, and I don't even know if it'll be anything, because I have started other novels that didn't end up being anything. Making some music, and I'll always be making music, and... that's it. We're going on tour. That's what I'm doing right now.
Cool.
And we're going on tour where Val will be making some music. It's not very often, probably. Well, I guess this kind of thing doesn't happen very often, but I know we feel very lucky that our author, Val, is also an accomplished singer-songwriter, so he will be joining us on some musical performances.
Was that... I'm sorry to interrupt, Justin, but was that... Was Val's ties to music and his musicianship. How was that important, and how do you feel like, this is a question for any of you.
He was that same surface level thing. It's like, oh, he likes music.
Oh, exactly, he can
do things about the past and remembering people.
Right, and also music.
No, but I think for the fact, not just being a musician, but actually being a songwriter,
right.
I think understanding the kind of what songs do and the emotions those capture and the moments those capture, for us, that did give us that even extra boost of confidence. Not that we needed it, but it did make us think, like, okay, a big part of this job is going to be how do we, in prose form, most of our emotional peak moments in the show, because it's a musical, will come at those song moments. And so it's going to take someone, like, I think Val's abilities and talents for music made us feel great, because it thought, okay, this is a person who's going to understand how to take what's happening in those songs and find a way to express that energy or that feeling. I mean, Val talks about listening to the music as he was writing, and because he understands what's going on in the music, I have no doubt that helped do that.
Right. And then, Stephen, we were talking before the recorder came on that you've got a new play happening right now.
I do.
Tell us about it. It's starring Mike Faist. Speaking of Connor and the actor who played him, it stars Mike Faist.
Yes, which is really exciting. It's called Days of Rage, and it's at Second Stage Theater. And it starts previews October 9th. And it's directed by Trip Coleman. And I'm saying everything but what it's about. It's about a group of kids in 1969 sort of planning the revolution from a dilapidated farmhouse in upstate New York.
Right.
And it's kind of funny and weird, and it's been a lot of fun. We have a really amazing cast, including Lauren Patton, who's also a really great musical theater performer.
Right. And Benjamin Justin, I need updates on La La Land, the musical, and Greatest Showman, the musical.
Oh,
go.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Going for the controversial.
Yeah.
Wow, smart. We don't have an update.
I would genuinely say you know more about both of these properties than we do.
We read things, and like, is that sometimes we try to make phone calls and say, is that actually happening?
Do any of them turn out to be true?
So far, nothing that we know of, but I mean,
I think there are aspirations.
For live versions or stage versions or experiences or something related to both of those properties, which would be cool and exciting if done in the right place at the right time and in the right way. And
but we can genuinely say to you, we have yet to have our first meeting on either of them.
This is true.
This is true. And so what else are you guys working on?
We're in the middle of working on an adaptation of Snow White right now for live action.
Yeah, taking the original classic animated and doing the...
Is that with Mark Platt?
Yes.
Yeah, Mark Platt, who is Ben Platt's father, and also an extremely busy movie and stage person.
Yes, true. So we're doing that. So it's all wonderful, but taking some of the most wonderful moments, you know, classic songs like Hi Ho and Whistle While You Work, and then sort of crafting a new, still set in the fairy tale world and all that, but a live action adaptation of that film and writing new songs and rejiggering some of the old ones.
I'm sure it's how Val felt and how we felt in other adaptations. You're basically just trying to not ruin it for everyone.
Right. Exactly.
And try to give the fans of the original what they
just
want.
Just like write a song, then like duck and cover, basically.
Right. And are the two of you working on a new stage musical, and is Steven involved?
We keep asking him every time we see him.
He's too busy.
I've got Days of Rage happening.
That's right. Television shows.
Oh yeah, you've got a TV show. Actually, you should tell us about that.
Oh, well, this is another theater-related thing. I'm doing TV show for FX. It's an 8-part miniseries about Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon.
It's got a spectacular cast.
Michelle Williams and Tommy Cale and Lin-Manuel Miranda are producing it with me. And it's really exciting. It should be something.
When is that? Is that next season? When does that air?
It should be out next year. 2019.
Okay, cool.
Again, they haven't told me.
All right. Well, when your schedule comes out, maybe you guys can write a new musical. Yeah. And we'll talk about that.
Keep pressuring.
Right. Yeah. All right. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being here. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having us.
That was Benj Pasek, Justin Paul, Stephen Levinson, and Val Emick talking about the recently released novel, Dear Evan Hansen.
If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I talk to Sasan Gabay, the Israeli actor who's now playing a lead role in The Band's Visit, more than a decade after he originated the same role in the 2007 film that inspired the musical. Until then, see you at the theater.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.